Despite her protests that her injuries were of no consequence, Jim would not let Louisa ride back to the wagons. He and Buckut cut two long, supple poles, and with a framework of lighter sticks fastened between them, the whole covered by the canvas ground sheets from their blanket rolls, they contrived a travois for Trueheart to drag behind her. Jim laid Louisa tenderly on it and picked the smoothest path to lead Trueheart back to the wagons. Although Louisa laughed from this comfortable bed and declared it the easiest journey she had ever made, by the time they reached the wagons her injuries had stiffened. When she rose from the travois, she hobbled to her wagon like a very old lady. Jim hovered around her anxiously, aware that any uninvited help he might offer would be rejected. He was surprised and delighted when she placed a hand on his shoulder as she climbed the wagon steps. He left her to take off her torn, soiled clothing while he supervised the heating of the water cauldron and the preparation of the copper hip bath. Zama and the other servants removed the after chest from her wagon and set up the bath in its place. Then they filled it with steaming water. When all was ready, Jim retired and listened through the canvas tent to her splashes and winced in sympathy to her small cries and exclamations of pain as the water stung her abrasions and thorn pricks. When at last he judged that she had finished, he asked permission to enter her wagon tent. "Yes, you may come in, for I am as chastely attired as a nun." She was wearing the dressing robe Sarah Courtney had given her. It reached from her chin to her ankles and down to her wrists. "Is there aught I can do to ease your discomfort?" he asked. "I have rubbed your Aunt Yasmini's sovereign balm and ointment upon mine ankle and most of my other afflictions." She lifted the hem of the robe a few inches to show her ankle tightly wrapped in bandages. Dorian Courtney's wife was an adept of Arabian and Oriental medicine. Her famous ointment was the family cure-all. Sarah had packed a dozen large jars of it into the medical chest she had given them. There was an open jar beside Louisa's cardel bed, and the strong but pleasant herbal smell permeated the interior of the tent. Jim was not sure where these remarks were leading, but he nodded wisely. Then she blushed again, and without looking at him, murmured, "However, I have thorns in places that I cannot reach, and bruises sufficient for two persons to share." It did not occur to him that she was asking for his help, and she had to make it more apparent. She reached over one shoulder and touched her back as far down as she could reach. "It feels as though I have an entire forest of thorns embedded down there." Still, he stared at her, and she had to eschew all attempts at subtlety and modesty. "In the chest you will find a pair of tweezers and a selection of needles you can use," she said, turned her back to him, and slipped the robe off her shoulder. "There's one particular thorn there just below my shoulder blade." She touched the spot. "It feels like a crucifixion nail." He gulped as he grasped her meaning, and reached for the tweezers. "I shall try not to hurt you, but cry out if I do," he said. But he was well practiced in caring for sick and wounded animals, and his touch was firm but gentle. She stretched out face down upon the sheepskin mattress and gave herself over to his ministrations. Although her back was scratched and punctured in many places, and pale lymph and watery blood wept from the injuries, her skin was marble smooth and lustrously pale where it was undamaged. Although when he had first met her she had been a skinny waif, since then an abundance of good food and months of riding and walking had firmed and shaped her muscles. Even in her present straits, her body was the loveliest thing he had ever laid eyes on. He worked in silence, not trusting his voice, and except for the occasional gasp or small whimper, Louisa said nothing. When he folded back the hem of her robe to reach another hidden thorn, she moved slightly to make it easier for him. When he peeled back the silk a little further, it revealed the beginning of the delicate cleft that separated her buttocks and down so fine and pale that it was invisible until the light fell upon it from a certain angle. Jim stood back and averted his eyes, although the effort required to do so was almost beyond him. "I cannot go further," he blurted. "Pray, why not?" she asked, without lifting her face from the pillow. "I can feel there are thorns that still demand your attention." "Modesty forbids it." "'So you will not care if my injuries mortify "'and I die off blood poisoning to save your precious modesty?' "'Do not jest so,' he exclaimed. "'The thought of her death struck deep into his soul. "'She had come so close to it this very morning. "'I jest not, James Archibald.' "'She raised her head from the pillow and regarded him frostily. "'I have no one else to whom I may turn. "'Think of yourself as a surgeon and me as your patient.' The lines of her naked bottom were pure and symmetrical beyond any geometrical or navigational diagram he had studied. Under his fingers her skin was warm and silken. When he had removed the thorns and anointed her various wounds with the balm, he measured a dose of laudanum to ease her discomfort. Then, at last, he was free to leave her wagon tent. But his legs seemed almost too weak to carry him.